He just got out.
That's right. That's right. That's first time.
Topic that was fitting for Isokan. And also, some of you, for last time about a year ago, we had something like this. We did Sefer Dvarim, so we're going to work backwards. We're going to do Sefer Bamidbar. It's a topic that relates to the land of Israel, and at the end, hopefully, I'll relate it a little bit. Not, we won't talk about politics, but it might relate in a positive sense. I want to talk for a word about, I will introduce what we're going to do in Sefer Bamidbar, and then we'll see how it will affect the land of Israel later on. One of the points I try to make when learning Chumash is not just to learn Psukim, or even Prakim, but to understand that there's books, one book at a time. And when you study a book, there's two basic formats that Chumash works in, which are very simple. There's what's called narrative format, or Sipur, and there's mitzvah format. Give me an example of a mitzvah format, something real simple. Make sure you give me an example of something Chumash which is a mitzvah format. The Ten Commandments. The whole book about Yikra. Parsha Tzitzit. Story, like Sefer Breshit is a story. So let's go by book. Sefer Breshit is basically a story. You might, if you look carefully, you might find a mitzvah here or two. But it's a story. Sefer Shmuel, the story continues. And as the story continues, all of a sudden we come out of Egypt. We get some mitzvot. We get the Matan Torah, we get some more mitzvot. Parsha Mishpatim. Then the story continues, the story at the Egel, the Mishkan. We come to Sefer Vayikra, and there's no more story. There's one or two little stories with Nadav and Abihu, but 90% of the book is mitzvot. Therefore, when we have narrative, we would expect the order to be chronological. It would only make sense. You wouldn't have the story of Yitzhak before the story of Avraham. You might have little like breaks in the action, you might have flashbacks, but when you get to mitzvot, the question is, what order are the mitzvot in? In Sefer Vayikra, it's easy. The mitzvot are organized topically. If we have time, we might even talk about that related even to Parshat Shavuot at the end. But there's a lot of mitzvot. For example, the first line of Sefer Vayikra says that these laws were given from the Olam Moed. Later on, there's a Parshat called Bahar, towards the end. The if laws that were given in Har Sinai before the Mishkan was built. So we see the book is out of order, but the topics, we go very pretty much in very logical order, topic to topic. That Dvarim we talked about, if you remember, we're not going to talk about that enough. Today we'll talk about Sefer Bamidbar, because it's pretty interesting how it works. If someone asked you, based on these books we've seen so far, Breshit, Shmot, Vayikra, meaning Breshit, all story, Shmot, sort of a mixture, but story and mitzvot, Vayikra, all mitzvot, to which book is Sefer Vayikra, Bamidbar more, most similar to? In Vayikra.
Oh,
yeah, okay. Yeah. How about Bamidbar? Why is it like Shmot? It's got a bit of both. It's got some stories. It's a mitzvot. Give me examples of mitzvot that we haven't said about Bamidbar. It's been a year since we read it, so it's been a little rusty. Yeah, we've read that. So we've just read that. And the Korban classic mitzvot. Tzitzit isn't there? Got that. Nazir, Sotah, things like that. Now, give me some stories. No shortage. Balak, Vilam and Balak, Pinchas, the Meraglim, stuff like that. You follow? Now, the question which I want to talk about first is what's the balance between. What I would understand it, I would appreciate that there's a. How it's built. And what we're going to talk about first is what's the blend between Sipur and Mitzvah, between narrative and commandment in the book. We're not going to do the whole, we're going to sort of scan the whole book. It takes 5-10 minutes, it's very easy. And we're going to, the truth is, I'm going to give a sheet that has all the answers on it, but it's like class. The worst thing you can do in class is give a student a sheet with all the answers on it and don't give him the opportunity to do it himself. So let's take a look at Sefer Bamidbar. I want to try to identify how the book works. Oh, Sefer Bamidbar. Bamidbar is real easy to figure out when it begins. If you look at the first pasuk in Sefer Bamidbar, we're lucky enough to have a date. The only other book that begins with a date is Bereshit. I guess, would that be time or is it before time? That would be today, the second, it's almost 2 days ago.
Right,
2 days ago. Right. 2-3 days ago. Rosh Chodesh, yeah. So it's the first day of the second month. Now, take a quick look. And remember, what's the topic of Perek Aleph and Bamidbar? Just real quick. What are we doing there? We're counting. Chumash likes to count. We haven't paid attention. Chumash likes to count. We remember how many people we have. Perek Bet, we take who we counted and we organize them in order. We put them in. We formed the army into four different brigades. And then Perek Gimel, just scan real quick. We're counting, who are we counting in Perek Gimel? And in Perek Daled, we're organizing the Levim. Basically, we're organizing everything together. But I like to say we're not learning Parsha Bamidbar, but it's not, we're not counting the people, we're counting the people who counts in, and that they count. I call it, if you know B'nai Kiva, I call Bamidbar the first Mishkan. Why? Because we know how many people, they counted them a month or two earlier. When they built the Mishkan, they counted them. That's the exact same number. So a Mishkan is everyone stands together on the day, but it's also like the first Rosh Chodesh party. But everyone's being counted. But when you stand up and being counted, you're telling the people that they count. That's why we count the heads. You ever know that? Suit Rosh, we count the heads of people. And like, or in Hebrew, there's a bodyguard in Hebrew, it's called a. You know what the bodyguard is called in Hebrew? Not Shomer Guf, Shomer Rosh. In Hebrew, Shomer Rosh. In English, bodyguard is something different. You see what's important in the culture. Okay, third Dalad. Basically, Alabet Gimel Dalad. We just did four chapters of that, right? We'll finish in 5 minutes. If I had to summarize those topics, it's basically we call Sidur HaMachaneh. We're organizing the camp. Nice and simple. Simple as can be. Would you call that story or mitzvah? What would you call it?
Narrative.
It's narrative. It's a story about the calendar. It's not a, not every generation has to do this. It's a one-time thing in the desert. Take a look at Parakeh. We'll skip the first three psukim. First four psukim we'll skip. It's about sending people away from the main people from the machaneh. Look at, there's a parshia from Hey to Yud. Just take a quick look and tell me what it's about. But tell me if it's a Parakeh, Hey pasuk Hey to Yud. You see the little parshia? Would you put that under the category of, tell me what it's about, just in a nutshell. It's about who somebody has to bring a korban chatat. A certain situation when you have to bring a korban. Do you do something wrong to bring a chatat? Would you call that narrative for Sipur? I mean narrative or mitzvah? Clearly mitzvah. Then the whole next big parashia, the rest of the parakei, about the laws of sota. What would you call that? That's mitzvah. That's not a story of something that happened. It's a mitzvah should that happen. Parak vav, we have the laws of nazir. You follow what happened? What happened in Sefer Bamidbar? We begin with a story, and all of a sudden we switch to a bunch of mitzvot. Remember Nazir, Sota, and look at the end of the above. All of a sudden we get Birkat Kohanim. Now, if you know your Chumash, it would be a Chidon HaTanach question. Okay. Where do we have Birkat Kohanim beforehand in Chumash? In a story? Anyone know?
Parashat Shmini.
Oh, yeah, well, you guys are okay. Yeah, what happened in Parashat Shmini?
Aaron.
You were supposed to know that. Remember, when Aaron came down, it says, Aaron came down and blessed the people. I'm bringing that down because we already had Birkat Kohanim. Birkat Kohanim existed. And if there's a place where we should have recorded Birkat Kohanim, it should have been in Vayikra when it happened.
Because
for some reason...
It's the same
Birkat Kohanim. Okay, at least when Aaron and Abihu died, we have laws of Shtui. We have a whole bunch of different laws about that seem to relate to what happened there. If we bring Shtui in, no one would raise an eyebrow if Birkat Kohanim was right there, right afterwards. Then take a look at Parak Zayin. See what we found? We had the first section was Mifkara, Sidur HaMachaneh, organizing the camp, followed by two chapters of different arrangement of mitzvot, which seem to have nothing to do with each other, very little to do with each other. Okay. Now, take a look at the beginning of Parak Zayin, and let's look at the date. It didn't say the date, but there's a date built into it. It says, Vayiv yom chalot Moshe lakim et ha-mishkan. You know what that means? The day that Moshe finished to assemble the Mishkan. We know what day that was?
Rosh
Chodesh. Oh, it's a big machloket, whether it's Rosh Chodesh or 3 days, 7 days before. But we talked about that. We have the exact same date in Parshat Pekudei. The last parak in Pekudei, the last parak in Shmot, is exactly that day. But we're bringing a different side of the story, because on that day, it was at a housewarming. And the leaders of every shevet brought a housewarming gift. And they all got together about the same thing. And the big gift they brought were the wagons. Remember? And they bring the wagons, and God says it's okay to take them. And then everyone brings the daily korban. That takes us through Parak Zayin. And then in Parak Ched Moshe, Aaron lights the... by the way, what would you call the... Is that Parak Zayin? Is it narrative or...? It's a narrative again. Parak Ched, the first part, we light the menorah. You can skip that for now. We'll see why. At the end of Parak Ched, most of Parak Ched talks about how we switch... The job that was originally intended for the Bechor, for the firstborn, who was supposed to serve God, got set aside the firstborn, and now we're giving the job to the lady. In Hebrew, they call them hachlafot, or the kids call hachlafot. You heard that word? Have you ever heard in school when you switch lunches and things like that? You remember little kids? So a little kid called hachlafot. Even in the army, they call that, believe me. Now take a look at Parakeh. This is more recent. Oh, by the way, so what's the date of Hakamat HaMishkan Rosh Chodesh Nisan? What problem did we just bump into? The book began Rosh Chodesh Iyar yesterday, 2 days ago, and now we're going back a month ago. Problem number two, we had this story already before. Perek Tet, we have another date. It's the second year. No, this is not Pesach Sheni yet. This is Pesach. The first couple of psukim is called Pesach Midbar. There's a special commandment to bring Korban Pesach in the desert. Why he needs a special commandment is because when you read Chumash the first time, it seems like Pesach is only to be, it says, Vayakit Tavol Haaretz, which would be a nice topic for tonight as well, but I'm not going to do that one. But Even though they were in the desert, they got stuck for another year, and you bring Korban Pesach anyhow. There's a big question. They brought Korban Pesach the rest of the remaining 38 years. Because of that event, some people were tamei. Big question what to do, and therefore we wait till Pesach Sheni. Guess how the Ramban deals with how it's out of order? Guess what the Ramban is going to say? Remember, we started the second month? How was that? The main topic is Pesach Sheni, and this is like a flashback how we get to Pesach Sheni. I want to give a different approach in a minute. But you follow? But the topic here again is narrative. You might call it mitzvah, but if there's a mitzvah, it's built into the narrative. It's a story of... we'll see exactly why. One parak, we'll see why. Look at the end of parak tet. Begin with Pasuk tet vav. We're back to Hakamat HaMishkan. And we're talking about the Anan, the cloud over the Mishkan, and how they would travel with the Anan. But that's for sure a narrative. And the beginning of Perek Yud, we have two, the Chatzatrot, for travel. Now, just look at Perek Yud, Pasuk Yud Aleph, and we're done. Now we have a nice day again. The second year, Ma'im Shana Shemi, Bacholosh Yashemi, Dasim Lacholosh Nala Hanam. The 20th of the year, run like Bomer, run there. Give or take a couple days. The Anan goes up and the people travel. How do they travel? Like they were supposed to. If you follow the story, how come? Why did Bnei Yisrael travel right to Israel when they left Egypt? Like God promised them. Like Moshe promised them. What was the ritual? Was the ritual plan to go right to Israel? First they have to stop to get the Torah first. So therefore, first it takes a couple weeks to get to Har Sinai. We get the Torah, we should go the next day, next week. Why don't we go right away after we get the Torah? Moshe's up on Har Sinai. When he comes down, why don't we go right away? Chet Ego. Moshe's got to go back up again, solve that problem. Why can't we go when we get the Midot Rachamim? God forgives them. Why don't we go right away? We have to build a Mishkan. We build a Mishkan, what should we do? We should go right away. What day did they build the Mishkan? Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Why don't we go right away? Remember happened? There's a 12-day party, isn't there? There's a 12-day celebration. And whose idea was the 12-day celebration? That was God's idea. Remember? They all brought the Korban on the same day, and God said one a day. Everyone gets a special day. Why don't they travel on the 13th of Nisan? That's the question for the women. Why don't you travel on the 13th of Nisan? Erev Pesach, you're going to clean, right? 2 days, 14th is Erev Pesach, you're not going to clean. Okay. Why don't they travel the day after Pesach? What happened on Pesach? What happened on Pesach Midbar? What happened on Pesach? People complained and say, hey. People complained and said, what's God tell them?
We're Tamei.
What? Yeah, we're Tamei, remember? We can't bring the Korban. What's God's answer? Wait a minute.
Wait a month.
In the army, by the way, they call that Shelat Kitpak. Anyone hear that? Shelat Kitpak? I'll explain it. It's, a little, for a few months, what we'll do a little is really lack of culture. in the army, a kitpak is a word in Hebrew. In English, it's called a kitbag. Kitbag, and when you enlist in the army, they give you this whole bag full of all your equipment. Your uniform, all the basic things you need. And that's called a kitbag. And you schlep it with you everywhere you go. And the first couple of days of basic training, that's all you do is just schlep the thing around for a while. So when you go out later on to basic training, when you go somewhere, you always ask, you're supposed to take, there's certain things to take with you. So there's always a stupid soldier who asks, do we need to take our kit bag? So originally it's supposed to take, let's say they're simple things. But because he asks, do we have to take it? So the commander usually gets angry and says, stupid question. Okay, now everyone, because of this guy's stupid question, everyone has to schlep the kit bag. So therefore, when you ask a stupid question, it gets everyone in trouble. In Hebrew, it's called a shelat kitbek. Everyone in this room knows it. It's called shelat kitbek. When you open your mouth and say something stupid, it gets everyone in trouble. It's like jargon in Israel. So that's what they call here, shelat kitbek. They said, hey, we want to stop. You know what? You're stuck in the desert for another month. What day are we up to? The 15th of Iyar. When does the Anan go up? On the 20th of Iyar. You follow? Basically, we have the story of what took so long. On the 20th time, we're ready to travel. You follow? Good, that's if that takes very. Then we're leaving. What do we need? We need a tour guide, don't we? Who's the tour guide? Here is called Chovav. I don't know if it's the same person, I don't get that machoket. But here his name is Chovav, probably it's his brother-in-law. Probably it's Yitro's, Yitro's other, yeah, Yitro's brother, probably. I won't forget. But Chovav is, and this give an answer, but it's a, you follow, the topic is traveling, no doubt about it. Narrative again. Vayibin Tzolorom, traveling. Perigat Aleph, as soon as we start traveling, what happens? Anyone who went away for Pesach, put the kids in the car, as soon as you start traveling, what happens? You're playing, this is not good, that's not good, and they all complain.
Okay.
Then Perigat Aleph, they complain, we get 70, we divide up leadership to 70 leaders. And then we get to the story of Miriam. Remember the Torah tells us lesson hard about Miriam? Did it ever bother anybody? If you want to teach that to kids, ask that question to them. And then learn the Ramban. We're going to get to that Ramban later, somehow tonight. Maybe by tomorrow morning. Perigat Gimel was the story of the Meraglim. You follow? The book's pretty clear throughout the story. The story finished with the story of the Meraglim. That takes us to Perigat Dalet. Look at Perigat Vav. And we're almost finished with the first. This is clarified my point. Look at Perigat Vav in the very beginning and tell me what the topic is. Okay, well, I'll just read for the Yom HaTzvut side of it. God tells Moshe, Tadrel b'nei Yisrael v'amatelem ki tavol ha'aretz Moshe potechem. Basically, I'll summarize. When you come to the land and you bring a korban to God, when you bring a korban, it's like you're not supposed to cook out. Right? So cook out is meat. But whenever you have a cookout, what else do you need? What? You need? What? First you need bread. You know, basics. You need rolls. Right? And you also need drinks. Right? What do we have here? When you bring a korban, you have to bring flour and you have to bring wine. We say it every day in Davin. I'm very yotam in Davin. Mikhatav and iskehem, kimidubar, right? And then, and based on the size of the animal, you bring the amount of flour you need. Now, why does this only apply when you come to the land of Israel? Why not in the desert? It's real simple. Why is the commandment to bring flour and wine only?
Not
in the desert. You can't bring mud with the korban. No, it's like, so it only applies when you're living in Israel. Then we have the law of challah afterwards. And then we have another imperative of another set of laws about a chatat. See from chabet to chavav. You see there? And then another thing about a korban. And then there's the story of the mokoshesh with another law about how to kill them. And then parshat tzitzit. You follow? How would you categorize imperative of? It's mitzvot. That's almost like by yikurim. Mitzvot to mitzvot. Is there any connection between them? Yeah. At most. Seems to be very random. Tzitzit, chalam, nesachim, chatat. What's going on? Mekoshesh, there's no... By the way, Mekoshesh is in the story. I want you to clarify something. The story of Mekoshesh is not part of the regular narrative of Chumash. Every single time someone got in trouble, we have a story in Chumash. Chumash isn't just a log, or a blog, no, I guess, of what happened in the desert. How come the story of Mekoshesh is here? Why does Chumash tell us the story about the Mekoshesh is the guy who gathered up and then, why is the story here as part of a law story? What's the chiddush of the story? We knew before Mechalel Motimah. We knew that if you Mechalel Shabbos, you're chayav. We didn't know how to kill him. And therefore, the story comes up, and here's how we find that the law of Skila, that we, how to kill somebody. But it's a law. But every time there's a law, it's always embedded in a narrative. What narrative starts most laws? Real simple one. By Dabra Hashem, Moshe Lemor. Sometimes more complicated. Like the Mekoshesh, like the Mekalel. You follow? But the story is there because it's not part of the ongoing story of Chumash. It's a story there because it introduces a mitzvah. Okay, then we get the story of Korach. Right then? Look at the story of Korach. That's Tevat Tezayim. It's the story of Korach. Look in Perek Yudchet. Perek Yudchet is a little complicated. Perek Yudchet are all these laws about what the Kohen gets for his first work. The priests who work in the Beit HaMikdash, what they get in return. Perigat Tet's a lot easier. The beginning of Parshat Chukat, it's the story of Parah Aduma. You follow? Which is, how would you categorize that? Again, there's law. You follow? You see what's happening in Sefer Bamidbar? Now we're going to finish the rest of the book in 1 minute. Perachav, the story of Moshe. Moshe's been to Beit Meribah. You all know that story? Aaron dies. They travel again. the more with Sichon, we get about the story of Bilam and Balak, the story with the daughters of Midian, Pinchas and Esper. Remember? Mr. Vico. When Korach happened, we don't know. When they read like that happened, we don't know either. But you're right, pretty much we jumped 38 years. We're in the second half of Bamidbar. And then we count the people again in Perek Chavav. And then take a look at Perek Chavket. There's a lot of stories through Perek Chavav. We count the people. The daughters of Sochal. And look at Perek Chavket. Someone mentioned it before. What's Chavket about? Every time you daven. Every time you lay, every yontif you rain from Pinchas. That's a lot of what's called Tmidim Musafim. Lamed and Darim, and then we have the story again of the war against Midian, we have the story of the 2.5 tribes, and then we have summarized all the Masot, and then we'll see what's at the end. So, you follow? See what's happening in the book? We'll go back and forth. Now, based on that, again, like you said, it seems like Shmot. But tell me, why is this different than Shmot? How is this combination between mitzvah and story different than Shmot?
Shmot really goes in two discrete blocks, more or less. The first part is much more narrative, the second part is much more
mitzvah. Okay, no, it's mostly story. And the first time we hit it, as the story goes on, how come the laws of Korban Pesach are brought down in Perek Yudbet right as we come out of Egypt? Why are the laws recorded there? It's a real simple question. Why? It relates to what happened. Why are the Ten Commandments recorded when Moshe goes up to make a covenant with God? Because that's what's written on the Luchot HaBrit. That's what they're about. Right? Why is Parsha Mishpatim? That seems to be that Sefer HaBrit, if we follow Chumash Rona like Ramban. The laws are part and parcel of the story. What's happening in Bamidbar? There's a story going on. The laws that we've seen, I'll give you a sheet now that will summarize them. The laws that we've seen so far, we'll take one for every two. No, this great chance, right? Like when you make four times, always make a lot less than you from what you expect. That looks like you have a good turnout. Just look for one every two. It's a real simple sheet. You really don't need it. The hard stuff will come with more copies of it. I was out on the sheet here, simply just a summary of what we did. Again, in school, this is like a whole assignment. You have the kids do this on their own. You guys are grown. Do a key look. Just take a quick look. This is simply to show you how the book oscillates between narrative and mitzvot. Back and forth. You see how we pretty organized what we did? Like organized in camp, when we have laws, we go back to story, laws, story, laws, story, laws. You follow? That's the way that... Yeah, there's another one here. Let's summarize what we did in the first 15, 20 minutes. That's what we did. Now, that structure of a book. There's no, we have extras in it? Now we get everybody, now we get more than one. Okay, here we go. Okay, here we go. Okay. We go back and forth, you follow? We go back between story and law. Nice and simple, is that clear to everybody? That should be simple clear. Anyone who goes Sefer Bamidbar has to be aware of that. It's such an obvious structure of the book. Now, when you see this, play student for a minute. You notice this structure. What question comes up in your head? What's
the relationship?
What's the relationship between the two? Okay, for sure we're gonna ask that. But what's going on? Meaning, let's put this book through a filter and filter out all the mitzvot. What's called these mitzvot, by the way, they're called mitzvot the dorot. There's two types of mitzvot. There's mitzvot the dorot, mitzvot the sha'ah. Mitzvot the dorot, everlasting laws. The sha'ah are only for that generation in the desert. Counting the people is a mitzvah, but it's a mitzvah, the sha'ah. For that generation, the Ramban uses that term all the time. Mitzvah, the dorot is for long term. What would you say belongs in the book? The mitzvot, the sha'ah, mitzvah, the dorot? If I had to pick, what's the primary topic of the book? Is it the story or is it the law?
The sha'ah.
It's for sure the story. Right? And then for the mitzvot that belong, the mitzvot, the sha'ah. Take a look at all the mitzvot that we have here, that we saw. The laws of Korban Chatat, the laws of Sota, of Nazir, Berkat Kohanim, Parah Aduma, Tmidim Musafim. Where do most of these laws belong? The Mitzvot Nedorot, but what book would they book? If you had to put them somewhere else. Almost all of them. Vayikra, maybe. Good question. and the Dharma is a good thing. There's a couple of exceptions. The majority of them could easily, you could fit them right into, in fact, almost in order, where they belong in Sefer Vayikra. What seems to have happened? And what were they given? That's a bigger question.
Early.
When were these laws given? Give me a proof, give me one law that had to be given earlier. There's one law that Chazal said right on this slide, had to be given earlier. Which one? There's one law there that had to be given earlier. Okay, the laws of the law was given earlier, but here was the case law with Shabbat, with the Makoshesh. But one law that we had to know the laws earlier. Why did Tumat Met, Paraduma, why did that have to be given earlier? Because, remember the Yiddish used to call it a chutzka, what we call it a shilat kitbeg? In Yiddish called it a chutzkasha. But when you said it, that was the question we brought up before. Meaning, the people complain, hey, we're Tamei, we can't bring Korban Pesach. How do they know they're Tamei? How do they know that you can't bring Korban Pesach if you're Tamei, if they didn't have Paraduma before? And how do God say, wait till you're Tahor? And therefore, you know when Chazal said they got these laws of Paraduma? What? And before there was a Mishkan. And that's why Petach Lomoid is very strange. But if that's what Chazal mean there, it's a cool topic. It has to do with Mount Har Sinai. So therefore, the laws aren't recorded. For sure, at least one of them isn't recorded when it was given. What's that mean? Let's think back a minute. When was Sefer Bamidbar written? Let's play from for a minute.
According
to Chazal.
I thought first.
Avraham Avinu where?
Or as they progressed.
No. According to everybody, it's Avraham Avinu. The question is that Machloket, how Chumash was composed, as opposed to how it was given. What's called Megillah Megillah. The way Chazal understand is that when Moshe Rabbeinu, I think we talked about this in the Shir in the morning. When Moshe Rabbeinu was writing Chumash, when Moshe Rabbeinu was playing Moshe Rabbeinu, when he was receiving the Torah, every time God told him laws, he wrote it down. Everybody had a little Megillah, rolled it up, and maybe he had a library. He had all these little Megillot, and he would teach them, they would copy it, etc. Comes the 40th year, remember what God tells him? Publish or perish? It's not written in this book. He takes everything that he wrote before he dies. Actually, it's published and perish. And now, what's going to be the question? What can Moshe Rabbeinu do? Remember, if he was a Yeki, what would Moshe Rabbeinu do? He'd look at the date stamp in every one and just put it out. We get one book, Shulchan Aruch, all the laws, one book, the stories, right? And we'd be bored. Right? And he'd have a job. And you follow? What's Moshe Rabbeinu do instead? Or Moshe Rabbeinu and Kodesh Baruch Hu Incorporated? I don't want to get the machloket, how much Moshe's a robot, how much he gets involved in himself. But how does Torah write itself? It doesn't follow. It's in the 40th year we put it together, and we compose five different books. And for some reason we take a certain set of laws, we put them all into Vayikra. Certain laws, for some reason, right, aren't Shmot. Maybe for good reason. Certain laws, though, were also in. But instead of putting all the laws together, we scatter them throughout from some of them into Varim. That's composition, isn't it? What do you see from here? When Sefer Bamidbar is being composed in the 40th year, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell Moshe Rabbeinu to do? First and foremost, tell the story of what happened. But as you tell the story of what happened, what are we doing? I call them like commercials. We have little inserts, commercial breaks, that are called halacha yomi in the middle. You follow what happened? Just that structure is important. Now, let's filter out all the mitzvot the Dorot. Filter them out. Pretend they're not there. What's the story? Let's organize the story into units. How would you summarize what's the first topic of the narrative? We organized the camp. We have the story of the day that they of bringing the wagons. We're traveling with the camp and the Nesim. And then what took so long? Who we traveled? Pesach Rishon, Pesach Sheni. How we traveled? With the Anan? Remember? The Torah guide? Give me a name for all that. What are we doing? In one phrase or less. What are we doing in the first 10 chapters or so?
I pray for war.
Not so much
for the travel.
The word's Nesiyah. We're preparing for travel. Tell me what you know by heart. What pasuk ends that unit? That's exactly how he did Sorum. And to delimit that unit, to emphasize that there's a unit there's a famous upside down nuns, to delimit that section, by Sorum. What's the topic from Tarikin Aleph? As soon as Bible runs over, they complain. Failure. Not just dinner. From Tarikin Aleph, you bet there's just troubles. Again, by the way, the story of Miriam and Pshat, you know why it's there? It's not only part of the downfall, but what couldn't they do until Miriam was, until her sorrow was over? They couldn't. They couldn't. That's the last line there. Okay. The people didn't travel until Miriam was. If I look, the topic is travel. Let's see. By the way, if you know, and you know, bankruptcy in America, what's called? What do they call bankruptcy in America? Chapter 11. It's that. Everyone's heard of chapter 11, so it's really cute. And Am Yisrael goes in chapter 11 in Bamidbar. That's when things go bad. They go bankrupt. The same thing happens in Bereshit. It's only by chance because the chapter division is not on North American. But also in Bereshit, chapter 11, mankind goes bankrupt. That's Migdal, Migdal Botam. There's no familiar books. It's a nice way to remember. Chapter 11 in Bamidbar, it's all downhill. Which culminates with one event, the Maraglim, which explains why is the story of the Maraglim so important to Sefer Bamidbar. What's it explaining? Why we're stuck in the desert. So it's interesting, the first part of the book explains getting ready to travel. Ideally, what should have been the rest of the book?
Going to Israel.
Back here, here should be Sefer Yeshua. Instead, we're getting the story of, not of everything that happened in the desert, we're getting the story of why that generation doesn't make it. It's not just the story of the Maraglim, it's the Mitonanim, the Mitavim, the whole, there's the whole set of events why they don't go in. And Kohen Ebenezer Korach even belongs before him. I can make up, remember that they can even move the story of Korach and put it over. But we have stories of why that generation doesn't make it. And even when we get to the 40th year, we're still sinning. Remember? Moshe and Meriva. And we have the Nachash and the Choshet. We're traveling again on our way, but still more problems on the way. What's the last, what's in this unit of why we don't make it, what goes wrong in the desert? It's basically the middle topic from chapter 11. Where's the last story of something going wrong in the desert? What's the last fiasco in the desert?
Pinchas
and the story of Benot Midian. For those who don't remember, we finally get, we're right opposite Israel. But Moab, they have too much free time, and what happens? We got a problem with the women of Midian, Bilam's idea, whatever it is, and then this guy gets really angry, there's a big magefa, and Pinchas comes and sort of saves the day. That's us. Now, after that, is there any story after Pinchas of anything going wrong?
I would say regarding God.
It's not a story of something doing wrong and getting punished, it's a story maybe it appears to be bad and we end up with something good. Because we wind our nachala. It's that the same? There might be an element of something wrong, but in the end, it's a good story.
Chabotinsky is right.
Yeah. In the same topic.
But you can see his parishman in Sukkot. The Shvat, these two Shvatim said, you know, we don't want to go in together. And then only so it got a pressure, okay, we'll go in and we'll fight.
It depends if you look at it. Are they super Zionists, right? Are they anti-Zionists? We're going to get to that. Has to do with the borders of Israel. Now, is it land of Israel or not? Hopefully, by the end, we'll see how that relates. But where that story is, it's going to be important in a minute. Now, what happens? Take a look at that point in Sefer Bamidbar. Perek Chavet. The last punishment. In Sefer Bamidbar, Perek Chavet. The end of Perek Chavet. Parsha Pinchas, perfect right in the spot.